Window World is proud to present Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, simply the best for less at WindowsKansasCity.com.
Tom Porto, the attorney for little Ariel Young, tells the Kansas City Star that Britt Reid should have been arrested by now and is getting preferential treatment. Porto also says this accident was foreseeable, and he's right. The Star reports Britt Reid was on the phone right after the accident as the mother of little Ariel pleaded with Britt Reid to call 911, but he waited before he did. The latest coming up. 120,000 kids, illegal kids, are about to be waved into the United States this year under the Biden plan. I'll tell you why this is so bad, but so brilliant by Biden and the Democrats. Gerard Dyson has rejoined the Royals. He's now the fifth former player from the glory years in training camp. Baylor wins the Big 12. Creighton basketball coach Greg McDermott used a word you can't use anymore. Now he's in big, big trouble. And we have a great conversation today. Jeff Coleman is a state representative in Jackson County, Missouri, District 32. He's conservative and about to lower your property taxes big time. We cover that. We talk about reopening Missouri, sports gaming in Missouri, and a statewide Rush Limbaugh Day with Mr. Coleman. It's ahead on KKHI, brought to you by Fry Orthodontics. 12 area locations to make it convenient for you. The best orthodontist in the city or at Fry Ortho. Your first appointment is free if you call 913-469-9191. You can schedule at any of the locations by calling that number or log on to fryorthodontics.com. Invisalign products are the best in the industry. They're the least intrusive. You can't see them. There are so many things that Dr. Jeremy and his team can do for you, and people won't even know it's happening. They say your smile is just the start. That's right, because the confidence you gain and the way you feel about yourself, Fry Ortho can help you. Check them out at fryorthodontics.com. Elite Automation, designing and installing intelligent building automation systems that can save you thousands off your utilities. Schools, churches, office buildings, you name it, you can make your building great again with Elite Automation. They specialize in retrofitting your HVAC control system. They don't change the HVAC. They make it work better for you. You get maximum comfort and savings. Seriously, what does it cost you to run your building? Elite Automation can lower that. I promise. They absolutely can. Call them at 913-766-2188. That's 766-2188 or online at eliteautomate.com. If you mention KKHI, they'll give you 12 months cloud hosting absolutely free. And my friend Mike and the gang at Roberts Robinson, Chevrolet, Buick, GMC, and Excelsior Springs. What a great week to go look at a great new ride. Whether it's pre-owned from their wonderful inventory of pre-owned vehicles, late model, low mileage, great safe cars at great prices, or something brand new from Chevrolet, Buick, or GMC. An unbelievable lineup of SUVs. Small, medium-sized, large people haulers. They're all right there. Whether you want a big Suburban or Tahoe, or you're looking for something like the Buick Encore, it's all at Roberts Robinson, Chevrolet Buick GMC, where we just make it easy at Roberts Robinson. This is the easy way to do business. It really is. They don't like to emphasize this, but it is better than the bigger city dealerships. You just get treated nicer. It's just a friendlier way to do it, and the cost is always lower. You can also shop online. Shop, click, drive at robertsrobinson.com. All right, the latest in the Ariel Young case and Tom Porto, the attorney's comments, and a conversation with Representative Jeff Coleman, right ahead now on KKHI. Hit it!
Sports, politics, life. Back 9 Development presents Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Online at back9development.com.
Spring has sprung. What a glorious day. Great to have you here at Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. I am feeling good midweek in the Midwest, 65 degrees, light winds. I think we're out of it, folks. It is so good. I was out on the roads the last couple afternoons and actually found myself in a little rush hour traffic. I thought, what the heck's with up all of these cars? And I think everybody is done with winter, done with COVID. Everybody's out. Everybody's doing something. The dog parks are filled with people. We're getting back in action. Texas is post-COVID. Mississippi is post-COVID. The governors have said, we're done with this. It is all over. The mandates are done. It's setting up an unbelievable situation where private businesses, who are in many cases going to be owned by liberals that want to remain shut down and have mandates and all these rules, are going to have to post signs on their windows that say masks required to enter, and then see what happens financially to their business when they do that. This is the beauty of America. This is what American greatness is. This is the epitome of American greatness. I can't wait to see the experiments in these states. And as we start to open up and the mandates are lifted and public pressure becomes, hey, listen, we're open and people are going back to life. If you are not on board with that, this is going to flip the entire thing. Because the people who wanted to be open have been at the back of the bus. We've been trailing the entire time. Now it's going to flip. As the states flip and say, hey, listen, we're open, the people that want to stay closed or want to wear masks for life or want to do all this other stuff, they're going to have very interesting personal and business relationships and decisions to make. This is going to be really complicated for them to try to figure out what happens. Let's say you own a coffee shop and you're a hardened liberal and you don't want anybody in there unless they're sitting at their table sipping their coffee. You don't want anybody in there without a mask on, and you want to stay at 50% capacity because you think it's safer for you, your employees, the right thing to do or whatever. If you become that store, what happens to your store? I think I know the answer. I think I know where people are going to go. I think they're going to go to Governor Abbott's restaurants that are 100% capacity. People want to gather. They want to go to concerts. They want to have fun. Millions are vaccinated. Millions and millions of more have had the virus. These are great signs. And watching people just go nuts over these decisions is great. Greg Popovich, the coach of the San Antonio Spurs, has just popped his top on this one that he's embarrassed for Texas and this is all ridiculous. It is so unbelievable that a guy who has not lost a paycheck, who makes close to $10 million a year as an NBA coach, who gets to travel on private aircraft, who gets tested relentlessly, and everyone around him gets tested relentlessly because the owner of his team and the league that he's in allows them to basically live in a world that does not exist anywhere other than in sports and in sometimes government, like the White House, would be like that. Someone who lives in that bubble, in that world, that has literally, this is the guy's, this is what the guy does. And I'm not speaking bad about this. He has every right to do this. But let's be honest, what's important? How do you identify with somebody who has lost their job or is doing something different or is working in a retail location where they're exposed to people, hundreds, maybe thousands of people every day, exposing yourself to COVID to go work for $15 an hour? How can you possibly tell people what's best for them when basically your contribution to life is two things? You've been a great basketball coach and you have one of the largest wine collections in North America. Millions and millions of dollars worth of wine he has collected. And to me, I would just say that as someone who's detached from reality. If Greg Popovich wants to pop off, the Texas should remain mandated and closed and people should remain unemployed. This is so tone deaf. It is the elite liberal class on display for everyone to see. And Popovich is just flat wrong only because, not that he doesn't make a good point about we need to be careful, we need to try to be safe if we can, that there are still dangers. I'm not arguing any of that. My argument is your life is not affected by this. Millions and millions of Americans have been adversely affected. Their kids have developed mental illness or learning disabilities or fallen behind in schools. They have financially taken on a stress that they've never had before. They have lost jobs. Their businesses have gone under. Greg Popovich is in no position because he is completely, completely tone deaf to the plight of anyone whose life has been ruined over a virus that in all likelihood did not, let alone kill, did not hospitalize or make anyone sick in their immediate family and has not, health-wise affected them, but it has ruined their life. And you cannot dismiss that at this point. You cannot dismiss what has happened to millions of people in this country and kids that are not in school. We can't ignore this stuff any longer. And to just say it's all about keeping people out of the hospital or keeping people alive, there is enough information for at-risk people. And within the next 6 weeks, everyone in America will have had the opportunity to get the vaccine. This thing is over. The charade is over. We got to get back to living. And Greg Popovich is wrong. And Gavin Newsom is wrong. And so many of them are wrong. They live in a bubble. They live in a non-real world. I've been around sports my whole life. I know what these millionaires are like. I know what they are like. They are not. And listen, that's not against somebody who may be listening to this podcast right now that lives a relatively normal existence that has millions of dollars. There are plenty of people with money that are grounded. Plenty. They are largely not giant celebrities and basketball coaches who've been kowtowed their entire life and you know, put up on a pedestal as some superhuman better than everyone else, which is what happens in sports all the time. And that's the life he's lived. And Greg Popovich believes, trust me, he believes he is more important and smarter than you. He does. He does. I know. I've been around these people my whole life. I know what happens to them. And it's clearly on display when they forget about millions of people that the lockdowns and the mandates and all this stuff have affected in such a negative way. So I'm happy, man. I'm thrilled with what happened in Texas and Mississippi. I'm very upbeat about it, and I think some other states are going to follow. A little bit later in the show, as you heard in the intro, Representative Jeff Coleman is going to join us from Missouri. He's got a really good idea for the governor, Governor Parson in Missouri, to lift the emergency status, state of emergency in Missouri. And the second that that happens, he thinks a lot of things would change with municipalities, counties, whatnot, that he just needs, he doesn't have to do what they did in Texas or Mississippi, but if he lifts that, it will dramatically change things in Missouri in a lot of places and create real pressure on Quentin Lucas and others to do some things. So I'm excited. I'm excited that the vaccine is working, that it is, that millions of people are getting it, that millions and millions more have had COVID, that we are very, very close to just this not being much of a thing at all. So that's exciting for me. The second half of the podcast today is the interview with Representative Coleman. So I'm not gonna rush through, but I've got a few topics here, news and sports, that I want to touch on. And the most important is we had the podcast yesterday where we played for you the piece with Tom Porto, the lawyer for Ariel Young. And he was sensational on Good Morning America and made some excellent points. We played that for you yesterday. Today, the Kansas City Star has done an editorial piece where Mr. Porto has given a couple of quotes to the Star's editorial board about this case with Britt Reid and young Ariel, who was paralyzed and in a coma for so long and is not doing well. And I will read a couple of paragraphs for you because I'm really happy that the Star is on board with this now. This is not Democrat or Republican, okay? This is, are you a good human being or are you not? You know, do you know the difference between right and wrong? And I'll read this to you. This is from the editorial board of the Star. It's hard to imagine that anybody less connected than former Chiefs assistant linebackers coach Britt Reid could have admitted to having a few drinks, two or three, he said, before a crash that paralyzed a five-year-old and yet would not have been arrested at the scene. Reid still has not been charged, of course, nearly a month after little Ariel Young last spoke or moved or responded in any way. On Tuesday, the attorney for her family, Tom Porto, reminded the world of that fact in an interview on ABC's Good Morning America. Porto told the Star's editorial board, quote, anybody else with two or three drinks who had Adderall on him would have been arrested right away. The Star writes, and we have to agree. Porto continues, did they have probable cause to arrest him for DUI? A police officer said there was, quote, a moderate odor of alcoholic beverages emanating from his person, whose eyes were bloodshot and red. So it would seem they did, writes the Kansas City Star. Ariel's eyes are now open, but that's it, the lawyer says. She's not walking, she's not talking. I'm not going to call this an accident, Porto says, because that's when kids spill milk. This was foreseeable, Porto told the Star. This is a bad boy with a history of alcohol and substance abuse and violence, and as the police put it, quote, multiple DUI contacts on his record. Of course, police want to make sure their lab results are right, writes the Star, as should always be the case. We hope they're not slow-walking this investigation, and they also need to make sure they're not giving Reid any special treatment. I agree completely. Porto continues with the Star. Whatever the toxicology shows, as Porto says, quote, this is a guy that wasn't looking at what was in front of him, unquote. Plowed into one car that had run out of gas, hit a second car with Ariel and her family in it that had come to help. And this is the most disturbing new information that we've heard. The Star writes today, the girl's mother told police, quote, as she crawled from her Chevy Traverse, she observed Reid standing, looking at the vehicles and talking on his cell phone. She pleaded with Britt Reid to call 911 since she couldn't find her cell phone after the crash, court records show. That should have been Britt Reid's first call, but at 9:11 p.m., he finally did as she asked and did call for help. Wow. The Star reporting this thing today that Britt Reid's first call was not to 911. This is not good, folks. This is really, really bad. I commend and applaud Tom Porto for going public. He has an open forum here at Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. If you'd like to be on this podcast, I will have him on anytime, any place, anywhere. All he's got to do is say the word, and we will make that happen. He is welcome here to discuss this case. And I think I speak for everyone listening to this podcast that we are on the side of little Ariel, period. And if Tom Porto decides that the maximum extent of the law needs to be followed to the prosecution of Britt Reed, then I support that. If Tom Porto finds that the Kansas City Chiefs were in any way complicit in this by hosting an alcohol party at the workplace, I am all on board with that. I will support these causes in any way I can. I have watched, and I don't want to belabor this point because I know you're football fans and you don't want to hear it. I have watched the history of this football organization for 30-plus years and the way these things continue to happen in our community and the way they buy their way out of it. It's what the Chiefs do. They buy their way out of these troubles. And if this is the one that is a bridge too far, where somebody stands up and says, money's not going to get it. We're going to prove something in court. We're going to prove that you did something wrong. If this is that case, I support that. Because that is the only thing that will keep this from happening again. This will not stop. The Chiefs have a pattern, a very strong pattern, of allowing bad things to happen at their workplace, with their employees, and buying their way out of it. It's a pattern that has to stop. It has to stop right now. This should have been stopped, and I've said it before. I should have made a much bigger fuss in 2019 about Britt Reed staying on this staff. I made a little fuss over it, that he was the only coach retained. I knew in my heart and in my mind that he was retained because he was a problem. He was a problem for Andy Reid. He was a problem for the Chiefs. And that they thought the best way to handle a problem was to keep it in-house with their strong-arm tactics, their lawyers, and the financial resources of their owner to protect them in case of this. And that's where we are. And what's happened, for Tom Porto to say this was foreseeable, I think he's talking about having two or three drinks and Adderall, it's foreseeable. I'm telling you, this was foreseeable in 2019. This was foreseeable before that. This has been foreseeable for a long time. I'm no genius. I was just the guy in the media willing to say it. Everyone else was scared for their jobs. I had the security of, if I'm out of here and not doing this anymore, I own the company and I'm getting a buyout. So I had the financial security. A lot of people in the media are not that secure. If the Chiefs told you, don't report about Britt Reed, don't do this, don't ask questions, you can't interview him, they went along with it. The media was complicit in this as well. They were more than happy to just go along with it for the sake of their jobs and their connections. I want to get Andy Reid on my show, or I want to make sure Andy Reid will talk to me for my column, so I'm not going to do this. We know it's wrong. We know there's something scummy and dirty here, but we're not touching it because I worry about my job and my family more. I can't badmouth those people for doing that. That just wasn't me. I still didn't do enough. And I lost my job. I still didn't do enough. And I've said that before on this podcast, and I mean that. Good for Tom Porto and his law firm in Kansas City, and best of luck to them in bringing justice in this case. That ultimately is the line I've got. That's just where my head is right now. I want justice to be served. I don't want the family's going to get millions of dollars. That's not fixing little Ariel. That's not helping her in her life. She has a long struggle ahead of her. And whether she ever has a real quality of life, we don't know. And I don't think you're ever out of the woods when you're a little child in this situation. As your body grows and everything changes and you've been through this, I don't think you're ever out of the woods. And I don't know if there is such a thing as a normal life for her. Nobody knows that. It doesn't appear that there will be a normal life for her after this. It's a blessing that she's alive. It's a beautiful thing for the family that they still have their little girl. But justice is more important than money here. The money will come for this family. This family will have millions. They will have millions of dollars. They will not have any problem with medical bills. They will be set for any care that they need for Ariel for the rest of her life. And they will have plenty of money beyond that to build a beautiful home and provide a nurturing, wonderful, safe environment for their family. They will have all that. That is less than 1% of the big picture. It's almost kind of a disgusting part of the American judicial system and the American culture. is insurance, big companies, whatever, when they wrong people, just being able to buy their way out of it. It is a little despicable when you think about it. That's where we are. A good piece from the Kansas City Star editorial board. Thank you so much. The Star is on board with this as well. And clearly there's a belief now that Britt Reid is, I don't think he's getting preferential treatment. Let me tell you what I think is going on. I don't think it's preferential. I don't think the police department or Kansas City, Missouri, or the authorities or the state of Missouri, if it gets involved at the felony level, I don't think they're saying, let's hook up Britt and Andy Reid. I cannot shout from the mountaintop loud enough how freaking strong the Chiefs are at this. You know, and I don't want to overstate it. This is not mafia. They don't kill people, all right? They don't put hits out. They don't do things that the mafia used to do. But it's very similar. It's very similar to the politics in Kansas City in the 50s and 60s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. The strong-arm tactics of the chief, H. Roe Bartle, and some that came before him, people that are in charge. Let me tell you something. There is nothing in this town more powerful than the Kansas City Chiefs. Nothing. Whether it's politics, and here's where it gets bad. You have a city investigating this thing, and who's at the top of the city? Mayor Quentin Lucas. And I'm not saying he's doing anything wrong. The appearance of impropriety sometimes is as bad as impropriety. So you have the mayor. What's his favorite thing in the world? Going to Chiefs games. He secretly went to Chiefs games this year and sat in suites while he told everyone else to stay home. And he didn't tell anybody he was going to Chiefs games. But he did. Whose suite do you think he was in? You think he was hanging out with Clark Hunt? I do. I think he saw Clark Hunt every time. Then, you got to stay home, don't travel. He gets on an airplane and goes to the Super Bowl. Great. Good for Mayor Q. He became the mayor of the city. There are perks involved in this. When you're kissing the ass of the owner of the team, hanging out in his suite, going to the Super Bowl, where'd you get your Super Bowl tickets? Did you buy them aftermarket? Did you pay $20,000 for your Super Bowl tickets, Mayor Lucas? No, you didn't. Where did you get your tickets? This is a big question. Where do you get your access to the Super Bowl? I'm going to tell you with 90% certainty it came from the Kansas City Chiefs. This is how power works. Then something really bad happens, and all of a sudden we're a month in, and Britt Reid hasn't been arrested. And it looks awful. But I know what the relationship is between the Chiefs and politicians. The Chiefs cuddle up to anybody in office, and anybody in office loves being in the owner's suite. Nothing more fabulous than being in a Chiefs Broncos game, and I'm hanging out with the owner of the team, and I'm in the suite. Oh, my God. And there's beautiful women, and they're serving me cocktails, and this is the life. This is unbelievable. I'm hanging out with billionaires. This is what sucks about all this. It's gross. It's gross. And if you're asking me, do you think the highest up people in Jackson County and Kansas City, Missouri right now are taking calls from the Chiefs? Hey, listen, we need to keep this out of the public for a while. Let's hang off on the toxicology. What are our legal ramifications? And by the way, the Chiefs have the best lawyers. Tom Porto, I'm sure, is exceptional. He doesn't charge in fees or doesn't get what the other lawyers are getting. The Chiefs have the best in the country. They'll fly them in from Texas. They'll bring them in from anywhere. They'll have the biggest, baddest heavy hitters and spend millions to defend their business because they have it. And it's like you and I paying a lawyer $1,500 for a case. For the Chiefs to spend $1.5 million is you and I spending $1,500 with a lawyer. It's the same. It's going to be hard. It's going to be a battle if they want to fight it. The Chiefs are powerful in this town. They will be going up against a machine that it's sickening. They will go up against a machine that is not thinking about little Ariel and that family. They're thinking about the next trip to the Super Bowl or sitting in a suite. Or what are my perks and kickbacks if the county kicks this in for repairs to Arrowhead Stadium? It's gross. It's gross. And it's all in play here. Don't think that it's not. It is. And I know you like football. And I know we love the Chiefs. I've found a really nice space in my life over the last 20 years where I can watch football games and still enjoy them and detach myself from some of the other things that go on. But I will never be the guy that is a sports journalist that ignores these stories. That is not why I got into this business. I went to journalism school, and I believe as a journalist, if you find something wrong, you shine light on it. And it doesn't matter if it's in politics or sports or a Girl Scout cookie stand at the Hy-Vee. It doesn't matter. If something wrong is going on, it's as simple as this. If you see it, say something. We've talked about this forever. If you see it, say it. You just do. And that's what I do. And I see it here. And I saw it in 2019, and I've seen it for a while. And it led to this. And Britt Reid should not have been working for the Chiefs. There's no question about it. Nobody is even asking that question anymore. We know that he sucked as a coach, that they fired every single coach on the defensive side of the ball except Britt. And when that happened to me, it was a five-bell alarm going off that they're still protecting this guy. Something isn't right with Britt Reid. They're keeping him here for a reason. I don't have any proof of this, but it would certainly make sense based on what happened with his brother and having drugs on the property of the Philadelphia Eagles, bringing drugs to the workplace, and eventually ODing with drugs in the workplace. It would make sense that the Chiefs were protecting him because they knew if he went out on his own, he would harm himself again, that something bad would happen, that maybe he was still addicted, or I don't know. It seems pretty obvious to me he shouldn't have been drinking, and it's painfully obvious that he is not a good football coach. He'll never work in football again. He was never a good coach, and he was carried on the staff simply because his dad was the head coach. This is as bad as it gets. It's as bad as it gets, but a pretty good read in the Star if you want to check that out. And again, Tom Porto, the attorney for Ariel Young, is welcome right here on Kevin Keatsman Has Issues anytime he would like to come. Briefly, we've learned over the last 24 hours the Biden administration has their eyes set on 120,000 kids being allowed in this year. These are illegals, unaccompanied, many of them. Why they have done this, you're asking yourself, why would the Biden administration want that many children coming in that are unaccompanied? This is real simple. To me, it's really simple. It sounds like the most dangerous, worst idea ever. And they say, well, they have loving parents who want them to be in America. The Biden administration wants to say, we're the babysitter. We're taking care of these 120,000 kids who are going to have a better life in America. We will help get them raised. We will, in many cases, find homes for them, place them with distant relatives or whatever. The state will take care of them, the state meaning the federal government. We will take care of this, and look at the job we're doing at the border and how this is such a play number one in the Democrat book. Our heart is so big. We're taking these children. They have a crisis at the border right now, and they are using children to deflect the crisis and gain sympathy from the American people and say, look at us, we care more than the other party. Well, what they're doing is, and what they know they're doing is, they're importing 120,000 future voters. More than that, because these people that are coming in now are going to have kids themselves someday. That's even more voters. This is all they're doing, is importing votes. And it's so disgusting that they're using children as a weapon in this battle for power and control. And the way they're using it for power and control is to gain sympathy with Americans and say, look how much bigger our heart is than these mean, awful conservatives. That's all this is. This is tactical. This is very well thought out. They've been thinking about this for years. They're going to deflect the attention away from all the bad illegals coming in and the flood of people that shouldn't be coming in, and some of them with COVID. We've seen that now. Plenty of COVID coming in the country. We're allowing illegally plenty of COVID to come in at this point. That's not up for debate. But that isn't the story. The adults coming in is not the story. What's the story? It's the children. Oh my gosh, look at all these poor children with no parents. Well, they basically put up the bat light. You know, is that what they called it? It was Batman when they shine the light for Batman. They basically turned on the bat light at the border and said, send us your children. You stay home. We'll make sure your kids are okay. This is despicable. We're intentionally tearing families apart because the parents believe pushing their children across the border and letting the U.S. government take care of them will be a better life for them than staying in Mexico or Guatemala or whichever country they're coming from. That's what this is. And the Biden administration passes it off here as good publicity. Oh, well, what, you know, no, they're not reporting that, hey, the Biden administration has put the bat light on and all these kids are coming. They got a welcome sign on. That's not what that's what's happening. Clearly it's what's happening. And then they go to the American people and go, we have such a big heart. We're going to take care of all these kids. This is the worst. This is disgusting. Absolutely disgusting what they are doing. I got an email from a listener named Dan. He says he's a fellow conservative. He's a K-State grad. He was at Ahern Fieldhouse in 1982 when Ronald Reagan spoke. Says he was a junior. I was a freshman. I've talked about this before. That was my second week on campus. and it changed my life. It was the most important week I had at college when Ronald Reagan showed up in 1982 and gave the Landon lecture. It was amazing. So he linked the story to me. He said, hey, I always encourage people, send me an email if you've got something for the podcast. And so he did, after he talked about that, and he linked a story from the New York Post. New York Post, this is a thing. This is about a gay polyamorous thruple. I knew of this thruple. Thruple is a threesome that's married. That's three gay men. So they're polyamorous thruple. They have the first birth certificate ever in California that have three parents on the birth certificate. This happened a couple of years ago. This is a crazy story. It's three gay dudes that are married, one woman's eggs, and another woman is the surrogate. Five people, four lawyers, $120,000, and they now have a child. And all three of the dad's names are on the birth certificate. And they're very proud of this. So they're writing a book. I don't really have any commentary here. These seem like nice people, loving people, you know, whatever. This is not the one I'm going to jump up and down and scream on. It's just, I'll repeat this line. Five people leading to the birth of one child. Five people, four lawyers, and $120,000 to do this. And now two of the dads are doctors. Dr. Ian Jenkins has written a book, and this book will sell big. And maybe there's a reality show coming. Who knows what's happening next? I don't know. But there's a book coming out, and it just reminded me that they're writing a book, and Josh Hawley got canceled by his publisher. Thank you, Dan, for the email. Excellent tip. Really appreciate that. In sports, the Royals have signed Jerod Dyson. He is back with the Royals for $1.5 million. I cannot tell you that I know exactly what his role will be, but they signed a player named Michael Taylor to play center field, who's basically a defensive player and not a very good offensive player. Well, that's Jerod Dyson at this point. He only played in like 20 games last year, batted .180. Jerod Dyson's at the end. But the Royals like reclamation projects with their former players. They love bringing them back. Jerod Dyson is back. Could he find himself in the outfielder? Could he be a fourth outfielder and defensive replacement? I mean, my opinion is you only keep one guy that's really good defensively and can't hit. I think that's enough. Maybe that's Dyson. Maybe it's not Taylor. I don't know. Maybe he doesn't make the team. Maybe it's over for Dyson. Pretty late in camp to be getting an offer, but the Royals have brought him back. The Royals now have in spring training Jerod Dyson, Greg Holland, Wade Davis, Dyson, Mike Minor, and Irvin Santana from the glory years. They're putting the band back together in Surprise, Arizona. Minor will make the team. I think Holland will make the team because he pitched well last year. We don't know about Wade Davis. We don't know about Dyson. We don't know about Santana. We don't know if they're retired players, if this is the end and the Royals are giving him a shot, or whether they will stick. One player that will stick is Jacob Junis. Will he be in the starting rotation, or will he be in the bullpen? Don't know for sure. He had a good outing on Tuesday in Arizona, and he has added a cut fastball, to his arsenal, which is a very important pitch. And it always is amazing that when I see somebody get to the big leagues and they're still adding pitches, sometimes when they add a pitch at this level, it is unbelievable what happens next. It's like, yeah, I got here. I was good enough. And then I added this and boom, it took off. Junis wants to be in the rotation. The Royals, I think at this moment, have him slated for the bullpen. We'll see what happens with Jacob Junis, but he has added a cut fastball. And if that becomes a really good pitch for him in spring training, look out. The Baylor Bears won their first Big 12 basketball title since 1950. That was the Southwest Conference. They beat West Virginia in overtime. This was a heck of a basketball game. Baylor looked a lot better than they did in their first two games back after COVID. They played sloppy against Iowa State and barely won. They played poorly against Kansas and lost by 13. And then they played West Virginia last night, and they look like they're knocking the rust off. They shot the ball better, they played well, and they won the conference. They are now officially Big 12 champions. We'll see how much more rust they can knock off before the Big 12 tournament. We don't know exactly what the seedings will be at this point, but it seems to me that the two best teams in this league right now are Baylor and Kansas. And I know most people would say Baylor and West Virginia. And West Virginia didn't do anything in this ball game to lead you to believe that they're not playing well. But there's something about Kansas right now. There's something about the Jayhawks. The way they're playing defense, there's something about Kansas. Don't take your eye off that basketball team right now. There's something about them. A lot of folks will not be taking their eye off Creighton basketball coach Greg McDermott. You may remember McDermott. He was coach at Iowa State. His son's a big-time player, and he's a big-time coach. Creighton's a good program. He was giving a speech, impromptu speech, to his team in the locker room and shouted out, "Come on, guys, I need you. I need everybody in on this. We all, you know, Marty Schottenheimer used to say, everybody grab an oar, man, grab an oar and row. You know, let's all grab an oar and let's row." That was what Greg McDermott was trying to say as he was giving the fire and brimstone speech, and he said these words: "I need everyone to stay on the plantation. I can't have anyone leave the plantation." And my gosh, is Greg McDermott in big trouble over this? I mean, big trouble. The point of this is, understand, if you're listening to this podcast today, and we make fun of the Dr. Seuss stuff and some of these other things that are silly, this is real. If you have a job, if you work or volunteer at your church, if you are around people, know this. The word plantation is getting very close to being the N-word. You can't use it. It is not in and of itself offensive, but you cannot use it in a sentence. You can't use it. If you do, you are immediately labeled racist. And this one is sticking. And people are changing names. Everything with the word plantation on it in the South is being blown up. And they're changing names. You can't use that term. Greg McDermott has found that out. His school's apologizing for him. This story could get bigger. It is hard to say. It's hard to say where this will go. This is a test for the word plantation. If Greg McDermott loses his job, we now know that the word plantation is the same as the N-word. We can't say that yet, but if he loses his job, this is a successful coach that Creighton does not want to lose. This guy's really good. They don't want to lose him. If they fire him over this, we know that you cannot use that word, period, at all. So keep your eye on that one. A reminder, Kevin Keatsman Has Issues is brought to you by Buck Roofing and Construction, online at rbuckroofing.com. Ron Buck's a personal friend, a great sponsor, and a longtime supporter of everything I've done on radio and in podcasting. He has also put the roof on my house, fixed my mom's house, all my friends, and he would be great for you or your business. If you need Kansas City's best, most professional roofing company to do the job right, on time, for what they say it will cost, Ron Buck is your guy. 913-384-2680, and you'll sleep well knowing Buck Roofing fixed the roof over your head. Bstock.net, the online electronics outlet. This is the only way to buy electronics going forward the rest of your life. Whether you need a computer, a keyboard, a monitor, a printer, a television, whatever it is, Bstock.net has it all. Check them out online. You want to see what they have? Go to the website. They have much more, by the way, at their outlet store and their warehouse. But if you want to get an idea of their prices and what they do, go to the website, B as in boy, bstock.net, and check out how you can save up to 30% on electronics by shopping local at bstock.net. If you go to their outlet store in Olathe, you save even more. 14680 South Flaming Road in Olathe. This week's special, the Samsung 75-inch 7 Series 4K television, $659. And if you buy two or more, bring a friend, they want one, or if you have a couple rooms you're redoing and you want a couple of big TVs, only $619. Amazing. Bstock.net, the outlet at 14680 South Flaming in Olathe. CBD-GC.com. This is Green Compass CBD, USDA organic, no THC. These folks grow their own in North Carolina, no middleman. It's for pain and inflammation, topical pain cream, or roll-on. Keep it in your golf bag. Take it with you at work. Keep it in the glove box. Whatever it may be, they also have great products for calming and focus. Stacey Higgins is a very good friend of mine. Her and Danny, her husband, have been friends of ours for years. And she's with Green Compass CBD now, a company that's just 2 years old, but they've quickly doubled their sales to $22 million in a business that's going to hit $20 billion by 2024. You want to make some side money? Stacey can help you learn how to be a rep for Green Compass CBD. If you'd like to get a hold of her, her phone number is 913-961-3881. Or just go to the website. The easy part is cbd-gc.com. So you can order the products and feel better. She says these are absolutely the best anywhere in America. Much better. They're more expensive. These are the best products, the best CBD products. There's no THC. So this is the way to go if you want to feel better, or if you'd like a little side hustle or a stay-at-home career, or add it just to what you're doing. Give Stacey a call, and she can get you some information on how to do that. This thing is growing. And if you know enough people, friends, and family, you can make some money. with CBD-GC.com. That's the website. Just go right there. CBD-GC.com. And Joslyn's Jewelry, 95th and Antioch in Overland Park. Miss Jessica was in Joslyn's over the weekend. We traded in what I got her for Christmas. And her earrings, her diamond stud earrings, we traded those in because they're of tremendous value, right? She's had them for years, but they keep their value. And she was able to upgrade to new diamond stud earrings. It was really a cool way to do it. Who knew that they do things like that? It's Joslyn's. It's different. 95th and Antioch in Overland Park. All right. We're going to talk with, have a conversation with Jeff Coleman, a Republican from District 32 in Missouri. He's got a lot going on in Jeff City. We'll talk a little sports gaming and other issues with Jeff Coleman. Here we go.
Sports, politics, life. Window World is proud to be the title sponsor of Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, online at windowskansascity.com.
Our conversation is with Representative Jeff Coleman, a Republican, of course, who represents part of Jackson County in District 32, Missouri House of Representatives. He was elected to his first term in 2018. In addition to his legislative duties, Representative Coleman is a financial advisor, specializes in retirement income. He has served as Mayor Pro Tem on the Green Valley Board of Aldermen, and as president of both the Grain Valley Economic Development Corporation and the Grain Valley Industrial Development Committee. He also served as vice president of the Grain Valley School Board for more than 7 years, so this is going to get interesting talking about schools. Coleman also is a past president of the Grain Valley Chamber of Commerce. In 2012, Jeff Coleman was named Grain Valley Citizen of the Year. He's an active member of the Community of Christ Church and a proud member of the NRA. We're so pleased to have him. He is born in Independence. He, of course, lives in Grain Valley now with his wife, Debbie, and 7 children. Jeff Coleman, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good, Kevin. Thank you for having me on,
Thanks,
buddy.
Thanks for being with us. Let's start with the human side. 7 children, how's that gone for you?
Well, I finally figured out what caused it, and it took me a while, but I got there. What's a little bit of a slow learner there.
What's the age range?
The age range was from 28, and our youngest is just turned 13 this past week.
So you can see the finish line at this point, huh?
Well, you know how it is. They leave and then they come back. So right. I hope at some point we'll get to change the locks.
So if your career path has been an expert in specializing in retirement income, I'm sure as your own client, you were pretty, it must have been difficult advising yourself on what to do with all these kids across so many years. How has it been difficult for you to plan what your life is going to be with that many kids?
So, I don't know that I'm ever going to get to retire, Kevin. You know, with 7 kids, you know how it is. The thing is that they are awesome. It's awesome to have so many kids because now I'm having grandkids, and that's the best thing ever. And it's just a matter of having that whole family together. When we all get together, it's so much fun, and it costs money, though. And so I'm school and everything else, I'll be working for a while.
All right, so we're going to get into a bunch of stuff here. Sports gaming, schools reopening. You've got a lot of experience with the school district and things of that nature. But there's something very important to you, and you wanted to come on the podcast and talk about this. And this is, you know, for a lot of the listeners, this is you know, policy. This is down in the weeds a little bit. But it sounds like it's critically important. There's a Missouri property tax assessment bill that you're introducing this week in Jefferson City. Because the thing is what? You just explain to me. It spiraled out of control for people, and you're wanting to fix the rate at which this could ever be raised for anybody that has property being taxed, correct?
That's right. Yeah, we're just trying to put a ceiling on how much they can raise. We're not taking any money away from anybody as far as municipalities and school districts and such. But what we are doing is saying, okay, here's the ceiling. You can't raise it higher than what, in this case, we use CPI. So really what we're doing is we're changing the whole system. We're taking away the market value system, which is when the county assessor comes out to your house, they say, I think this is how much your house is worth. There's no standardization across the state. We learned that in public hearings that we did a couple of years ago. The people, I was really inspired by the people that came to those public hearings that were worried about losing their houses because they were going to get taxed out. And these are people that have been in their houses for 40, 50 years. These are people that are younger people that are in lower income areas that are on a fixed budget. And so as we continue to raise those values and we continue to charge them these taxes, we are creating a position where we're worried that these people are going to get taxed out of their homes. So that's what inspired me. The bill simply does this. If and when this bill passes, and the people of Missouri have to pass this, I can get it passed through the House and the Senate, but that's just to get it on the ballot. Then it goes out to the ballot. The people of Missouri get the vote on it. They're the ones that decide whether this goes through or not. And what it does is it does away with market value, and it inserts consumer price index. So if you look back in history over the last 40 years, the consumer price index went up on average about 1.9% per year. So if we look at that in the last raise of the county assessments, we had one property in Jackson County that went up 1,400%. Mm. There were a lot of properties that went up anywhere from 14.9 to 400%.
Wow.
What's sad, Kevin? The property tax values on 74,300 properties that were in lower income areas went up 14.9%. And what's the importance of that? At 15%, the county assessor has to go out and do a physical inspection. 14.9 is lower. They can do it from their office. And if you're doing it to people who are in lower income areas, they don't always have the wherewithal, the money and such, to go back to the Board of Equalization and say, I want to contest this. Because you got to come in with your own information. You got to come in with appraisals and such to show this is why you're wrong. So those folks don't have that capability. They're living on their... They're living day to day.
This is so important, Jeff, because it sounds like everything else we hear about, whether it's, you know, kids not being in school, any other issue of things that are out there, it seems like it hits the lowest earning people in our community first and the worst. It sounds like same thing.
Yep. You bet.
Man.
You bet. And then you got the senior citizens that are on Social Security. Once again, fixed income.
Yeah.
So that's what this bill is all about. It's just to help those folks.
Yeah. Do you have Democrats on board, or do you even need them?
To be honest, we don't need them necessarily to get it out of the House. We might need them in the Senate, but I do have Democrats on. This is not a partisan bill. This is a bipartisan issue.
Great.
So,
well, go get it on the ballot. If you get this through, when would it be on the ballot for people to vote on?
Hopefully this next November.
Yeah. Okay. Well, go get them. That's not the thing that grabs all the headlines, I understand, but man, these are the things that are really important. I think that we probably don't talk about government enough is people really looking out for the citizens within their district or in the state of Missouri. And I would think there would be bipartisan support on something that would at least control this, so people don't lose their homes, lose their properties. Good for you. I say good for you. Now, you were president of the Green Valley School Board for more than 7 years. What do you make of, and we saw on Tuesday, state of Texas is 100% open. They are now officially post-COVID as far as the government in Texas is concerned. Mississippi, about an hour later, followed suit. The governor there felt emboldened and said, we're doing the same thing here. It's over. There are no mandates, no regulations for any businesses, nothing. Now, we've seen an instant reaction of schools and businesses saying, well, we don't care. We're still going to require masks. Well, you know what? If you own a sandwich shop and you hang a big sign on your door that says no mask, no entry, you're going to have a tough time. I think the private sector is going to take care of itself in a lot of places on these things. Where do you stand on these things they pertain to schools? Because you know, I live in an area where the schools have been open for a long time, but I live 2 miles from areas where they've never opened. And I know what it's doing to these families and these kids. What's the right thing to do? What should we be doing right now, Jeff?
Well, you're talking to the wrong person if you want somebody that says we shouldn't be in school right now, because being a member of the school board for the last almost 11 years, we actually in Green Valley did a survey prior to going into school this past year. And on that survey, we had 73% of our constituents that said they wanted their kids in school face-to-face. we had about 20%, or 19 or 20 that said they wanted to go virtual, and then a few percentage off of that. But here's the thing. Last year, our graduation, we wanted to have graduation, and we typically have it at the Community Christ Auditorium in Independence. But we were told by Jackson County that we couldn't do that. We could do it, but you could only have two people attend per student. That was just crazy. We could that's not a graduation. So what we did, as many school districts in Jackson County did, we went outside the county, and Green Valley went down to UCF, and we had an awesome graduation. We were social distance. Everybody had masks on. We did everything you're supposed to do at that time. Remember, that's back last May. But when it was over and we got ready to start school, Jackson County called a meeting of all the school districts in Jackson County. And they basically said, you didn't follow our guidelines. You went outside the county. So just know, if you go back to school full time and you start having any cases, we're shutting you down. So we caved into that. But Blue Springs, which is also in my district, I'm not going to ding Green Valley. When somebody's threatening you, and that's what they were doing, what are you going to do? But Blue Springs said, we're going to go ahead and go face to face. And I'm just really proud of them as a school district, because they've been in school face to face from day one, and they have never been shut down. They had some cases of COVID just like everybody else has, but not to the point where they couldn't teach their kids on a day-to-day basis in person, because kids need that interaction with the teachers and the other students. I don't care who says they're fine without it. We're hurting right now. We have kids with depression, and it's an issue. And I'm 100% behind getting back to school.
I just saw today that the number of 13 to 18-year-olds nationwide in the last year that have filed medical claims for something self-inflicted, for harming themselves, hurting themselves, has doubled in this country. And if you're 13 to 18 years old, you are 12 times more likely to die of suicide now than COVID. And I it's just unbelievable what we have done. And some people just want to keep doing it. And you know what, Jeff, seriously, it's past the point of no return. This isn't about the kids. Okay, this is not people watching out for the welfare of the kids. This is not good for young people. We know that. We also know they're not at risk. If you want to make some sort of an argument that teachers are in danger, my argument to that is, what about the people working at Walmart? You know, I'm sorry, teaching is more essential than working at Walmart. And I love people that work at Walmart. I'm not saying anything, but those people at Walmart have worked every stinking day since this thing happened. Walmart didn't close down. People had to go to Walmart. And the people that worked there were scared a year ago doing this. And the teachers have been sitting at home. And I just get the feeling in a lot of places that the teachers just don't, they just want control. They just want control, and they really aren't interested in doing the right thing.
Well, Kevin, if you've been following us down here at all, last week we had a big vote on some school choice legislation on the House side. And I'm on the school board, and I voted for that bill, because we have to start allowing people to have a choice with their money.
Yes.
Their money. If the teachers aren't going to come to school.
That's right.
Period.
That's exactly right. No, that's exactly right. Now, I believe, and I think a lot of conservatives believe this, but I don't know what percentage, and maybe you do, maybe you don't. I think the highest government authority, in my opinion, in this country is the state level. I believe this country was formed as a group of states that have one federal government that we mostly was designed to stay out of our way. Each state gets to be unique in their own way. So when I saw Texas and Mississippi do what they did and say, COVID's over, we have nothing. And I think the governor of Texas is very serious about even going around in the most liberal inner cities and saying, no, you will not have mandates. You're not doing this. There are no restrictions. The state will back up and stand in for any business that wants to be open in Houston or Dallas or Austin. We're not going to let them tell you have to close at 9 o'clock at night, or you have to have this, that the state law is going to apply. So we may have battles coming in Texas or in Mississippi. Is something like that possible in Missouri? I mean, we sit here with Mayor Quentin Lucas, who's been throwing down all kinds of restrictions on people in Kansas City that a lot of business owners don't like and a lot of citizens don't like. Is there anything the state can do? Can the state take over and say, look, we're going to go post-pandemic? 100%, no mandates, no lockdowns, no nothing, you're back. Can the state do that?
I think that, first of all, the governor here, Governor Parson, has done an awesome job, and he's really allowed the local communities, the local municipalities to make their own rules, right? But I think the way that that happens is that he takes us out of a state of emergency. Once that happens, then they no longer have that control of being able to say it's mandate. So I think, I'm not sure where we're going down this path as far as our governor is concerned. I am a supporter of this governor. I do appreciate the fact that he wants to give local control. There's a part of me that agrees with that. But when local control takes over to the extent that Jackson County and Kansas City have in this pandemic and closes everybody down without the thought of what they're doing. I think it wasn't it President Trump that said the cure can't be worse than the disease.
Right.
And that's exactly what's been happening. We're closing down businesses. You have Rex Archer who sits up in his office making six figures. I think it's over $200,000 a year. And you're sitting there, he's saying, you can't be open. You can't be open. You can't be open. I'm shutting you down, but I'm still making my $250,000 a year, whatever it is. And that's just not right.
Yeah. No, that's career government is what that is. And we see that in so many ways. I'm curious, Jeff, if you have any thought on this. I live in Johnson County, Kansas, and grew up there. Barely. I grew up not very far from the Wyandotte County line. So, not that that really matters, but it's grown so far south and it's changed so much in my lifetime. Johnson County, Kansas has kind of become purple now. It's not really red. It's not really blue. It's kind of purple. But what I have seen is, in just my observation, in my last 20 years or my adult life or whatever, Kansas used to be more red than Missouri. And it no longer is. Is that just because of Johnson County? And how did Missouri become so much more conservative over the last few years? Was it Trump? Was it at the state level? Is it people who live in smaller populated areas or rural areas taking more interest in voting and taking over the state? How has Missouri become so conservative the last few years? I think it's fantastic.
Well, I think it goes back to the morals and values of the people out in the countryside. I grew up in the country, and we have a lot of our folks, I think, just want to have that moral value of that the left doesn't, they're going the opposite direction, right? And Trump had a huge play in this. Trump has really gone out and gotten a whole new group of people interested in what the Republicans represent. And it's kind of almost done a flip-flop, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You see the blue-collar workers now who are Republican, and your white-collar people are trending more to the left side of things. And I don't know. I don't know what has really stirred that up. But bottom line is I'm happy that it has. Our state house has got a super majority on both sides, the House and the Senate, and we control every office in the state except for the auditor's office, which I think is going to change the next term. So, yeah.
Well,
I don't know.
I think Trump woke a lot of people up to this thing, and maybe, you know, I badmouth big tech and social media a lot, but maybe the word has gotten out to people and it resonates. You know, I grew up in a union household. My dad was a backhoe operator in Local 101 here in Kansas City. He was blue collar. My brothers and sisters were the first generation college in my family. So we grew up, hey, listen, my dad worked hard. He provided everything we needed. Nobody, I'm not complaining at all about my upbringing, but I know a lot of people whose upbringings were a lot different than somebody whose dad that ran a backhoe. But I also remember my dad, at least as was discussed around our house, and politics was not a big topic. He typically voted for Democrats because the people that ran his union said, vote for the Democrats. It's good for our union. What I learned when I became an adult was it was good for the people that ran the unions that the Democrats were winning, but not necessarily good for the people running the backhoes and digging the ditches and stuff in the unions. And I think people have figured that out now. that the muckety-mucks at the top of some of these unions are skimming, they're working with the left, they're working with those politicians, and folks that just, you know, pack the lunchbox and go to work every day have figured out, you know what, those, the people who run my union really aren't necessarily like me. They're millionaires. They're really rich. They're in bed with the politicians, and I think Trump brought a lot of that out, and a lot of people that just work for a living are like, I've never understood my whole life why union workers and people who like really work for a living, I've never understood how they could ever vote for Democrats. And I think the chickens have come home to roost on that.
I would agree with you. In my district, Kevin, in Green Valley and Oak Grove, some in Blue Springs, it is heavy in union workers. And when I went out campaigning at the very beginning, right to work was on the ballot. And when I go to the places that have that had please vote no against right to work, I go up there because I knew that they were a union, and we'd talk. And I talked about some of the issues that I had, and we had good discussions. And when I left, I said, you know what? I know that you're probably Democrat, and because of the union issue, and I just love it if you like what I'm doing, please just don't. You got to take a Democrat ballot. Just don't vote for the Democrat that's running against me. And they kind of chuckle. I would say 80 to 90% of the people that I have that conversation with were Republican. Mm-hmm. They were union workers, always voting Republican at this point in time. And so what you're saying is absolutely right, because they're starting to wake up. It's not the union workers that are the problem. It's the union bosses.
That's right.
And they continue to just slam the Republicans. And we even had a Republican up in North Kansas City. I'm trying to remember the gentleman's name. He was in the House, and then he went for the Senate. And the unions, he voted for the unions. But when it came to the point where he needed them to help him, they bailed on him. So the unions are not our friends. And so we just move forward, talk to the people that are the workers, and let them know that we're here to support them.
Well, I say to this day, I think my dad secretly, privately voted for Ronald Reagan. I don't know how he didn't. My dad was very conservative, but he always felt like the union provided for his family and his children. And they did, man. We had great health care and benefits, and God bless the union. And it was a serious deal, you know, back in the 60s or 70s. Workplaces were not safe. I mean, the unions were working toward workplace safety. They were doing a lot of things for the workers that unions don't really have to be involved in much anymore. It was a totally different deal than it is today. But I always said he was a very conservative man who voted for Democrat because he was in a union. And I think there were a lot of folks that way. And I do think that has changed. So, hey, we lost one of our great Missourians here a couple of weeks ago in Rush Limbaugh. I would never, ever, ever have left television and gotten into talk radio, sports radio, and now this, if it weren't for Rush Limbaugh. He was a complete and utter inspiration for me. And I know some of your colleagues in the Missouri House want to name January 12th every year in the state of Missouri as Rush Limbaugh Day. How's that going? Do you need Democrats to support that? Because I think that would be the greatest thing ever to have that pass in Missouri. I'm assuming you're for it. What's the outlook on that?
I'm absolutely for it. And I think, you know, the benefit that we have down here right now is the fact that we are a supermajority. So we don't have to have the Democrats' votes on this. I hope that they can put some of the politics aside and look at what this man has done for the country in radio, period. But I have a feeling that politically that's not going to happen. I am 100% behind this. He, you know, I kind of grew up with him, and I left Missouri for a period of time and went to California. Don't ask me why. The good thing is I'm back. But he was out there, and I can't remember if he followed me out there as far as coming out after I went out there or whether he was already there. But the fact is that when I was there and I could listen to him on the radio every day, it felt like a little piece of home was there. And so I love what he did for this country. I love what he did for our party. And he's a hero of mine. And so I absolutely am behind this, and we'll vote for this on the floor and try to help it get through on the Senate side. So
Good for you.
Let's finish with this, and this one's a passion of mine. I like to bet on football games. I've done it for a long time. There was a time and place where I was scared to death that it was illegal and they were going to haul me off to jail and all that. I think those days are over. And the states might as well be cashing in on this. There's casinos in Missouri and Kansas. You can pretty much bet on anything in Missouri. I mean, you can bet on a roll of the dice, the spin of a ball, the add up the cards. You can play poker. You can bet on anything in Missouri or Kansas except sports. And it looks like that's about to change. I think Kansas is going to get this passed this year. And I know this is not a top priority for you and not necessarily your field of expertise, but is there any concern if Missouri falls a year or two behind Kansas and the bordering states that some bad things are going to happen revenue-wise when the time comes that it does pass in Missouri? Or do you think Missouri's so conservative now there may be resistance and it will not pass? Where do you think sports gaming is?
I don't think that it's to that point. I do think it's going to get passed. I don't know all the details on some of the bills that are out there right now, but I do believe it will get passed. Do I think that there may be some lost revenue while we're waiting for it to get passed, but I think that once we get it done and the governor signs off on it, people will stay here in Missouri. We passed some bills 2 years ago for the border war, which I was proud to be a part of. And that was just to stop this battle between trying to steal companies across the border. In light of that, I think that you'll still see the borders, you're always going to see back and forth, but I think you'll see that we won't lose as much revenue as people might think when we get these things done. The fact that Kansas has it done first, I think that they'll get some revenue while we're waiting, but I think we'll keep our revenue once we get it up and running.
All right, I lied. I have one more, but this will be a fun one. And if you don't have an answer, I'm putting you on the spot, so it's okay. You went to Graceland University, right?
I did.
Who was the greatest athlete in Graceland University history?
No, you would do
no,
that to
see,
me.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have gone there.
It'd be
there.
Jeff Coleman, wouldn't it?
Jeff Coleman, okay.
Jeff Coleman, I played football there, you know, so.
Okay, well, who was the best player on your team then?
Of course it was. No, I can't remember the names, but I know where you're going with this. I will always call it Bruce Jenner. I will call him Bruce Jenner every single time. I don't know who Caitlin is, so right. There we go.
That is unbelievable. So I
know.
It's one of those little fun facts that you just have to bust out every now and then.
You know, I got to tell you about this real quick. Bruce Jenner was not the best athlete, even at Graceland, but he was the hardest worker. And so his coaches will always tell you that it just takes hard work to get to the top if that's how much you want it. So I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
Right. We won't talk about the other part of that.
I think he's a Republican, isn't he?
It used to be.
Yeah, okay.
No, I apologize. I when I said it, I didn't mean him or her. I just meant that he used to be a Republican. Yeah. I don't know where he stands now.
I think she does at this point. I don't know. I see Graceland. Whenever I see Graceland on a piece of paper, I think Bruce Jenner.
Exactly. So. There you go. Well, LA does crazy things to you, let me tell you.
Well stated. Thank you, sir. I greatly appreciate your time. This was a lot of fun chatting with you. And if there's ever anything that's important for the state of Missouri, you give me a buzz anytime and we'll get you back on. How's that sound?
Kevin, thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on. It was a blast. Thank you.
Representative Jeff Coleman, a Republican from District 32, Jackson County in the Missouri House of Representatives on Kevin Keatsman Has Issues.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. For additional VIP-only podcasts, live streaming of breaking news, sports wagering tips from the experts, and in-person special events, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron for as little as $5 per month.
This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media, Incorporated.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. For additional VIP-only podcasts, live streaming of breaking news, sports wagering tips from the experts, and in-person special events, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron for as little as $5 per month.
This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media, Incorporated.